those of you who may have just called in the last minute or so, Srila Dhanadhara Swami, this is Mahamuni Basa. Dhanadhara Swami contacted me and told me he can't make the class tonight, and he asked me if I'd be able to lead a discussion, particularly about the discipline of Karma Yoga, as described by Sri Ramanuja. So I'm going to do that. So like I said a few minutes ago, if you called in for Maharaj, and I won't be offended if you would like to go, but those of you who are in the mood to stay and listen. I think that quite often we have a certain idea of Karma Yoga, those of us who maybe came to the practice of yoga from by some connection with Srila Prabhupada, maybe, or broadly in that connection. We have a certain idea of Karma Yoga, that is the kind of thing that basically you do, maybe if you're attached to working or something, and you try to give some of the fruits up in service and sacrifice. And my eyes were really opened when I started to read Raman. Oh, by the way, everyone, I don't know how to mute the phone, so if you could kindly mute the phone on your side, I'd be grateful. And I've talked with Dhanadhara Maharaj quite a bit about this to some degree, that I found it really interesting that Sri Ramanuja, in his commentary on the Gita, he pretty forcefully makes the point that the Karma Yoga is really the kind of thing that any aspiring bhakta should do as a way of purifying your heart and learning to connect your life to connect your work and connect to what seem to be your worldly activities or your secular life to God in a spirit of service. So anyway, you know, these Wednesday discussions are about yoga, and so Maharaj thought it might be a nice idea to share some of the things that I thought were really valuable about this idea of Karma Yoga, particularly, as I said, as Sri Ramanuja describes it. So anyway, that's our agenda for tonight. I don't know. I like to start sometimes by asking if what people's impressions are of the thing that we're talking about or what people's ideas are. Would anybody be inspired to share like your sense of what Karma Yoga is, or really, just to see what people's attitudes are? Does anybody have any sense of what it is or any idea?
Hare Krishna?
Yes.
Hare Krishna, this is Bhushan here.
Thanks.
Thank you for your class. I really appreciate your classes. I don't come online usually, but I listen to from the audio section. So my idea of Karma Yoga was one of the heard was that whatever we work, like we offer the fruits to Lord Krishna, for example, give money for his festivals, and say the Krishna starts to work and whatever they earn, they use it for festivals, for DT, for programs, or whatever, for sponsoring prasadam, etc. That might be a form of Karma Yoga.
Okay, so if I understand then, the gist of what you're suggesting is it's a way for people like grihasthas who work in the world to try to use the fruit of their work, namely their earnings and things like that, to support service in various ways through festivals. Forgive me, my phone isn't always clear. Can you repeat your name to me again, please?
Bhushan.
Did you say Bhushan?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Bhushan. Appreciate it. Anybody else have any other suggestions, or would you like to add to that? Or
Hi, Krishna Mahamuni.
There you go.
One thing I would probably add is, in addition to the fruits of one's work, in Karma Yoga, I think you can offer, the work itself, whatever you would normally do in your everyday life, generally, I think you can do that as a service to Krishna and make that Karma Yoga. and you know, do your work for Krishna without any desire at all to benefit from the results of your work, because the work, you would do the work for Krishna, and whatever would come of the work that you do, that would also be for Krishna.
Okay, so if I, do I understand that what you, the distinction you're making here, Gail, is that we often think of karma yoga as offering the results of our work to God in service, but you're also suggesting that while we're doing our daily work of various sorts, we can be in the mood of offering that very work to God. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. The reason for working in the first place is to please God.
Right. So it's not just that we have a work that we do for ourselves, but we can actually see our work as service.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you. I intend to speak more about that because I think it's something that's not easy to understand, and it seems like cheating sometimes. Thank you, Gail. I appreciate that. Does anyone else have any suggestions or any realizations that they'd like to put on the table as kind of part of our... what we're doing right now is we're carving out the conceptual space, so to speak, that we're going to be working within to consider karma yoga. Anyone else have any suggestions? Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's... basically, carrying out your duty based on Vedic injunctions.
Okay. Thank you. Carrying out your duties based on Vedic injunctions. By the way, do you mean Vedic injunctions, broadly speaking, to mean like your religious injunctions? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right, that's good. So I think that you've all mentioned really important aspects of karma yoga. And so maybe... We could take a step back. And by the way, everyone, let me know if there's noise. You know, I have kids in my home, and you know, things are going on. So I'm currently in the one place where I'm trying to escape them. You can all imagine what that place is. It's the bathroom in my downstairs of my condominium, and I hear them outside. So I feel like I'm hiding from my own family here. So anyway, if you hear noise or if it gets distracting, let me know. It's just, you know, par for the course. Hopefully, when they go upstairs, I can go back down on the couch. At any rate, you know, karma yoga, we learn about karma yoga, the context where karma yoga becomes an option for spiritual practice is, of course, the Bhagavad Gita. And it's initiated or it's inaugurated by the conflict that Arjuna faces. Namely that, by the way, everybody, I came outside so into my bigger room in my house, so if it's too much noise, let me know, I won't be offended. It's inaugurated by Arjuna's conflict. And his conflict, to put it fairly crudely or simply, is that he thinks that a life of action precludes a life of spirituality and contemplation. As far as he's concerned, if he wants to escape worldly entanglement, then he has to escape his ordinary work. He has to escape broadly his swadharma, meaning like his occupational responsibilities, and of course more, not only that, but in a wider sense, things like the various duties he has according to his social, familial, cultural statuses of various sorts. And so Arjuna is convinced that if he wants to avoid karmic entanglement, he has to avoid engaging in the world. And so, you know, karma yoga is first announced to us in the Bhagavad Gita as Krishna's way of trying to get through to Arjuna the point that there doesn't have to be this kind of chasm between contemplative life and active life. They can be fused. And this attempt to fuse them is karma yoga. And in many ways, it's such a nice term because karma means action. my understanding is that karma as action is any, it's a more, it's not just my understanding, I think it's just the truth. The more fundamental meaning of karma is action. I mean, that's a more fundamental meaning than things like cosmic justice. Karma means action. And yoga means contemplative discipline. So it's a really nice word because the two come together in a really beautiful way in this practice. One is meant to work, and yet work in a way where it can itself become a contemplative discipline. And so in that context, particularly in the first six chapters of the Gita, although it comes up again in chapter 9 and again in chapter 18, particularly in the first six chapters of the Gita, we get a sense of this idea that to think that there needs to be a radical division between a life of action and a life of contemplation is a mistake. And frankly, the more I read the Gita, it strikes me how I, through much of my young spiritual life, even though I'm supposedly in the line that really puts the Bhagavad Gita in the center, for years and years I've really had this misconception that I really thought being in the world was in some way kind of disqualifies you from contemplative life. And I had this idea, and I think many of us did, you know, being in the ashram is really the way to be a contemplative. And don't get me wrong, I still think it's easier in many ways to. But my gosh, Krishna didn't speak the first six chapters of the Gita as a joke. He's obviously saying something really important. And what he's saying to Arjuna is you have to find a way to unite your life of action with your life of contemplation. You have to. And there's really that wonderful verse in the eighth chapter of the Gita when Sri Krishna says to Arjuna, let me try to see if I can remember it. Can't remember the Sanskrit right now, but he says to Arjuna, you should think of me, mam anusmara, you should think of me and fight, yudhyacha. Think of me and fight. Do both of them. He doesn't say fight, but just fight until, you know, you find a way to avoid having to do that, because thinking of me is the really important thing. He says, no, you do both of them together. And he even says to Arjuna, and I think this is something I confess to you that we sometimes in our spiritual community forget. He says to Arjuna, even if you're qualified to renounce the world, you shouldn't, because it sets a bad example. And because people who are unqualified may imitate you, and it'll ruin their lives, and the world will come to ruination. Now, that certainly seems ever like timely advice. So this idea of karma yoga, it's something which it's central in the Gita. And as I mentioned in the very beginning of our discussion, Sri Ramanuja, you know, the great pioneer of Vaishnava Vedanta, and the great guru, really, for all of us in many ways, he argues that karma yoga is not something that you do when you can't do bhakti or something like that, and it's not that when you can do bhakti, you ignore karma yoga. He said that for neophytes in devotional practice, karma yoga is something you do to purify your heart, and you do it to try to surrender to God and learn the kind of to develop the disposition of taking shelter of God. And even at the higher levels of bhakti, he argues, you always do karma yoga because you're always going to, in some way, be in the world and around the world. And so when you are, this discipline of finding God, surrendering to God and offering what one does to God, it's always going to be something that's part of our lives. So I just, you know, part of my interest in karma yoga part of my interest in this topic is very autobiographical. I'm convinced that if I don't find out how to really succeed in karma yoga, then I'm going to fail in my personal efforts. And I have a fairly strong conviction that that's the case for all of us who are in the world. Although I can only really speak for myself when it comes to assessing success and failure. So anyway, I thought that, so given this kind of introduction, I'd like to talk a little bit about Ramanuja's explanation of how one performs karma yoga. That's something we can try And I've tried. I mean, gosh, by no means have I mastered this, and that's an understatement. That could be the understatement of the century. But I do find, at least, that I do try to engage in it when I pull my mind away from the various distractions of life. So the first thing I think that we can note is that activities done, first of all, I guess, the arena to perform karma yoga, like the kind of arena or the context that we perform karma yoga, is in our, is, how to put it, the arena for the practice of karma yoga is our dharma. That is to say, our responsibilities that fall within our moral and spiritual obligations and allowances. So dharma is the occasion for the practice of karma yoga. So what kind of things are dharma? Well, those things we do to survive, you know, to support, to keep existing, to keep body and soul together, to put food on the table, so long as those things aren't against dharma, so long as those things are not opposed to dharma, they're the kind of things that we can perform karma yoga through. In a number of places in his commentary on the Gita, Ramanuja says, very emphatically, he says, you should offer your laukika and vaidika activities. Laukika very literally means worldly or secular. Vaidika, you know, means religious. So he says, both of them you offer. It's not just your religious duties or something like that in a strict sense, in a narrow sense. It's everything. So that said, I would suggest to you, though, that just historically, I guess we'll say, it seems to me, this is an opinion, I have to do more research, admittedly, so you can, you know, whatever, put it in the folder where, don't take it as gospel truth, take it as one person's reflections. It seems to me that in Ramanuja's commentary, he starts by talking about karma yoga in relation to things like the kind of religious rituals and duties one does. And he makes the point that you can do these things in one of two ways. You can do them in the spirit of generating good karma or doing kind of your religious duty, but where you know in some way you're going to benefit. And, of course, that idea goes very close to the kind of religious attitude that Krishna is criticizing in the second chapter of the Gita when he starts describing karma yoga. You remember the Veda, Vada, Ratas, those people who are attached to the word of the Veda, and they think that the real ultimate goal is Bhoga and Aishwarya. So Sri Ramanuja, in that context, says, generally, there's three things when one is doing these kinds of good karma activities. There is the sense of being an agent, where one thinks, I am doing this. There's also the sense of honoring some divinity. Normally in these rituals you honor the gods in various ways. So there's one who's doing an act, there's the beings in some way who you're trying to gratify or placate, and then there's the sense of enjoyment that I will enjoy the good karma that I get out of this activity. So there's kartritva, kind of the sense of being an agent. There's what is it? Aradhyatva? I'm not sure, I'm speculating there, but the sense of being that which is to be worshipped or honored. I forget the exact Sanskrit of that one. And there's bhoktritva, the sense of being the enjoyer of the karmic results. So in a kind of sacrificial context, those are three key features of the action. Now, in karma yoga, Ramanuja says, you do the same thing. You do the same exact thing. He says this really beautifully in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita 2.41, the Vyavasyatmaka verse. You remember there it says that there's two kinds of buddhi in this world. There's the focused buddhi of the yogi, and there's the ever divided buddhi of those who want mundane enjoyment. And Ramanuja says these two kinds of buddhis really determine, it's like they determine the content of the action, even if the action is the same. one person may do these various kinds of religious acts for good karma. Another person would do the same act, but they do it in the spirit of honoring God. That's their core concern. They're honoring God. And so he says the only distinction between acts of that are karmic, in this case, and acts which are yoga, the only distinction is one's sankalpa. Sankalpa basically means your intent. And so, excuse me, I'm just shutting a door. And so, we see that what distinguishes karma yoga from mere karma, in this case, is simply one's attitude. Again, we're already assuming that what one is doing is here dharmic. And the kind of immediate context is a kind of sacrificial culture of the kind that the Gita describes. But still, I think we can generalize to our lives, but we'll get there in a second. So what Sri Ramanuja explains is that, so what does it mean to have a different kind of sankalpa? What is that different attitude? For someone who's really kind of just living a life based on their own personal needs and desires, your attitude is, I'm doing this act. Maybe it's, again, in a sacrificial context, it means some kind of part of a life of ritual duty. But broadly speaking, you know, I'm doing an act because I see there's some gratification in the future for it, for me. And I see that I am really the central feature in this act. It's me. Sure, there's a world out there, but the act really centers on me. So the different kind of sankalpa that Sri Ramanuja talks about, it hinges on these three kind of features of an act, that one learns to see them differently, and one learns to see Krishna, God, in all three of these. And what allows us to change our intent, he says, is a deep and regular reflection on Upanishadic truths, like the fact that the Paramatma, the Lord who pervades the world, sustains everything and sustains even my own ability to subsist and sustains my body. And by reflecting on that, what one realizes and what hopefully we learn to see in the world is that what sometimes seems to be a world of things out there and me right here, it's a world filled with God. And that my ability to be an actor or an agent in the world rests on God's, to use an English translation of a word Ramanuja uses, God actualizes us. God allows us to actualize our soul is to our body, so God is like a soul in relation to us, in that God supports us and from within prompts us and guides us. So the first kind of transformation of our sankalpa is about our own agency. We try to reflect on the fact that although it feels in many ways like I'm an independent agent, so much of my ability to do anything depends on God's allowance. And therefore, I can act in a spirit of dependence. I can act in a spirit of gratitude. So the kartratva, we start to see that although I have some ability, I am an agent in some ways. It's not that God does everything. I have a little bit of agency, but much of my agency is derivative. Ramanuja compares it. He says, you can imagine like a bunch of people have to lift a boulder. And there's like, I don't know, I'm just now making up the number, but imagine there's like 20 people get together to lift a boulder. So when you're thinking about karma yoga, you're one person and God is the other 19 when you're trying to do things. Again, I'm giving you the number, he just gives the kind of example. But so that's the sense of kartritva. Then there's the sense of who is to be worshipped. We're in the sacrificial notion, it's the gods. He also recognizes that the gods, too, depend on the Paramatma, just as we do, and therefore we should see that in all acts of sacrifice and all acts of religious obligation, even those which don't directly mention the Lord, the one Paramapurusha, right? God proper, we should see that actually he is being honored in all of these. That's our way of reconciling the fact that the Vedas speak of so many gods is this polytheism that somehow the later theistic traditions tried to whatever. Well, Ramanuja says clearly, according to the Vedanta, the one Lord supports all. And just as you can refer to a soul by pointing at the body that the soul is within, so you can actually refer to the Lord who's the soul of all by pointing, by speaking to, by doing things in relation to the gods who are to the Lord in many ways as a body is to a soul, even though they are souls and they have a special relation because God is the soul of all souls even. So we, in those contexts, those who are honored, we should see as God. And finally, the Bhoktritva, the enjoyer, whereas often we're motivated, and again, this isn't an evil thing, it's just our conditioning. We're often motivated, or it doesn't have to be evil at least, we're often motivated by a sense of our own personal enjoyment. We should try to do these acts in the spirit that I'm doing dharma, let the enjoyment be in God's hands, and God will take care of me. But I'm trying to simply do it because it's dharma. And dharma, as Ramanuja has explained, although I forget the exact verse now, since dharma is ultimately God's commands, even worldly responsibilities we can do in the spirit of gratifying God. And so these three things, the sense of agency, the sense of who is being honored, and the sense of who enjoys the results, we try to see God in the center of all those things. And so, although, as I said, I do think that the immediate context of these teachings in the second chapter of the Gita, where they are first laid out, is a kind of sacrificial culture. Ramanuja himself says you should offer your laukika acts too, your worldly acts. And again here, I think the idea is you can offer it so long as it's not opposed to dharma. And so, you know, in our own lives, we don't necessarily live in a life of Vedic sacrifice or something. But certainly, even basic morality, right? Treating others with respect, we can do in the spirit of honoring God who's in their hearts, much like you honor the gods through sacrifice and the Lord who's in their hearts. And so anyway, this kind of transformation of the sankalpa that Ramanuja talks about, this is the crucial factor in turning what would ordinarily be karma into yoga. And so you might ask, okay, yeah, you know, you need to have a change of attitude. Well, that's a kind of, you can understand it theoretically, but how do you actually live that way? Well, to my mind, and I try to practice this, although I admit there's days where I'm not able to really give the kind of attention to it that I should most days. The idea is to at least have some kind of time before one starts one's day where one tries to just reflect on these truths that the Lord is in everyone's heart. And as Kapila says in the third canto, you honor the Lord in the heart by honoring those who are his abode. So that could be a way we reflect on how our relationships in the world can be a vehicle for karma yoga. We reflect on the fact that our responsibility to our family is something that we do in the spirit of honoring God. And again, I don't want to get on the soapbox, but I think many of us have had a misconception about this, that somehow like our responsibility to our family is like a kind of spiritual failure if you have a family. One of the great, mistakes that we've inherited in many ways. But Krishna himself says, don't leave the world. Maybe a select few can. So we can use these responsibilities and see them not as a kind of fetter that gets between us and God, but as the very means for realizing God. I'm kind of resisting the urge to preach here. I don't really like to preach. I consider it, on my part, a bit, I don't mind other people preaching, but I feel a bit pretentious if I preach. But I imagine when we're talking about this, you know, Arjuna and Krishna looking at the battlefield, and Arjuna looking away from the battlefield, talking about liberation, talking about contemplation, and Krishna pointing back at the battlefield and saying, your liberation is there. That's where your liberation is. It's not off in the woods. And so I think for me personally, this is something that has taken me many years after living as a brahmachari to realize this is where our contemplation is. And so this idea of transforming our sankalpa by regular practice, by prayer, of course, by meditation, and hopefully by grace, to me, this is really the key feature of karma yoga. And so anyway, I'm not going to read them right now, but those of you who have access to Sri Ramanuja's Gita, if you don't have it, I wholeheartedly advise you to get a copy. It's just an incredible text. And it's really interesting to see how, thousand years ago, how some of the strategies he made for explaining the verses trickle through the ages, and you can see them in the pages of Srila Prabhupada and Thakur Bhaktivinoda and others. There's particularly two commentaries that are really powerful in this regard. Bhagavad Gita 3.30, where he describes a lot of the things I've been talking about today, and Bhagavad Gita 9.27. Right? 9.27 is clearly a text advocating karma yoga. Right? Yad karoshi, yad ashnasi, yad chuhoshi dadasi yat. Whatever you do, yad karoshi, yad ashnasi, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you offer in sacrifice, whatever you give away in a spirit of charity, the dasiyat, yat tapasyasi kanteya, and whatever hardships you undergo, whatever penances you perform, mad kurushva, yat kurushva, you do that, madarpanam, as an offering to me. I mean, could there be a more obvious sense of the verse than the kind of thing we're trying to consider today? So anyway, his commentary on those two verses are extremely powerful, and I hold them very dear. And basically, the kind of things I've been talking about today are a kind of summary of the points he makes there. But at any rate, those are a few reflections on Sri Ramanuja, on karma yoga. I don't know, my feeling is, my gosh, if I can find some way to succeed in this, then I can feel like I'll have accomplished something that will be very much to my benefit and perhaps even to other people's benefit. Are there any comments or questions? Okay, so thanks everyone for calling in, spending time with me. Again, I apologize. I apologize for not being Dhanadhar Swami, but I don't apologize for being me. I want to make sure that I've been talking to no one for the last 20 minutes. Gail, you're there, right? Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Hey,
Hare Krishna.
Thanks so much. Yes. Okay.
I just had
You had a comment, Prabhuji, or a question?
Yeah, I just have a question. I was reading that the performance of karma yoga develops into jnana yoga. I was a bit I was not sure how it kind of transition takes place to jnana yoga and then to dhyana yoga and then to...
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't entirely clear. Can you repeat your question again about jnana yoga?
Yeah, I had this conception or I heard from somewhere that the karma yoga gradually develops into jnana yoga. And from jnana yoga, it develops into kind of a dhyana or bhakti or whatever, something like that. So how does the karma actually develop into jnana yoga?
Well, there's different commentators in the Gita are going to have different ways of explaining this. So, the general way that I understand it, according to Sri Ramanuja, for example, is that karma yoga you can do even when you're not at a very high level of spiritual attainment. You just have to be someone who wants to do dharma and someone who wants to find a way to connect their dharma with God. And so by every day trying to do this practice, you become more detached. And you become not only detached, but you, more importantly, become more connected with God in every aspect of life. And so by doing that, you become liberated from mundane attitudes, right? And so you could imagine that by doing that, you can become, you can become qualified by living that way for many years, or by trying to live that way. You can become qualified to renounce the world and do jnana yoga and dhyana yoga, which kind of just mean inactive contemplation, right? Contemplation where you're just sitting down with your mind. You're not really engaging with the world. So you can become qualified to do that. And Ramanuja says that you do become qualified for that by karma yoga, but the idea is, because karma yoga, he says, already contains meditation on the self as part of its practice, you may be qualified to do that, but there's no need to actually do it separately. You just do karma yoga, and you do bhakti, and you don't actually have to do this separately. Some other teachers, my hunch would be teachers like in the Advaita Sampradaya particularly, would say you do karma yoga until you're qualified for jnana yoga, then you just give up everything and just do jnana yoga. For me, the biggest problem with their interpretation is it directly contradicts the Bhagavad Gita itself. I mean, Shankaracharya's biggest problem is the Bhagavad Gita. it's not the theists. It's that the Bhagavad Gita repeatedly says, don't give up the world, do karma yoga. And he has to say, well, Krishna really means this is for a lower level of realization, but Krishna himself doesn't say that. So I think from a kind of Advaitin perspective, there's that idea that you do karma yoga, then you do dhyana and jnana yoga and things like that. Srila Prabhupada, generally, as far as I can understand from reading his commentary many times, is that he generally treats the karma yoga verses really as just describing bhakti in the world, like doing bhakti kind of actively. So sometimes he speaks about karma yoga as a separate discipline, but often he just sees it as a kind of part of bhakti. And I think that really his view and Ramanuja's view tend to coincide, except that Ramanuja tends to have his notion of bhakti tends to be kind of a very high level of bhakti, where you have to be good at meditation to do bhakti. So what he sees as karma yoga, we see as bhakti, because he sees karma yoga as offering your work to God and offering those things to God. And so, anyway, I think their views coincide, even though they have slightly different ways of speaking about it. Did that help, or did I give you more information than you wanted? Is that
cool? No, that definitely helped. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Anybody else have any comments or questions? Well, anyway, thanks for those of you who stuck around. I hope this was useful for you. And my hunch is I'll be running into some of you virtually, at least, maybe on the next Sunday call. So take care, everyone. Vanchakalpatrivishcha kripasindhubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Chaitata sarvakarmani. Haribol. I'll recite to you a karma yoga verse in farewell. Chetasa sarvakarmani mai sanyasya matparaha buddhi yoga mupashritya machita satatam bhava. All right, take care. Thanks again.
Hare Krishna.